dishonor some checks, we're going to deal with some other things. What's the minimum standard, Jim? A little electric.
Senate Bill 187 by Duncan. Senator? Jim?
Pardon?
187?
Okay.
Enacted a minimum electrical standard.
Chair, what is your schedule today? I'm confused. What's the other bill? Do I have another bill up to?
198.
Which is what?
198, your bill on dishonored checks.
Oh, okay.
199.
199.
What's that one?
On motor vehicle dealers. Duncan did.
I wasn't aware those other two were up. I guess I'm running late here. That's fine. What's the first bill?
187.
187. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time going over Senate Bill number 187. I hope someone from the department here who can testify probably more specifically to it than I can. I was requested by some representatives of the electrical industry to introduce the legislation. What the legislation does is bring the state of Alaska in line with that National Electric Safety Code. That's the intent of the legislation.
Okay, is Tom Stewart here?
And I'd rather have someone from the department to...
Support the bill. Anybody have any questions about the bill?
Can you do that? I'm in talk to it?
No, not right now.
What's the bill coming?
You want to co-sponsor that with me?
Yes. One question I have, when you say it's supported by the industry, it's supported by the contractors and unions?
Mr. Chairman, yes. In fact, it was someone from the unions, electrical unions, that came to me and brought to my attention that the bill had not been introduced, bringing us into conformance. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, the administration did not put the bill in. So I did at the request of those individuals.
What's the rule of the committee? Senator Shemansky?
Move and ask unanimous consent. We move out SB 187, individual recommendations.
Any objections? So done. Senate Bill 199.
Do we have some backup here?
That was on the motion to charge bill.
199.
Would you move today?
Put a summary on this. You just want to testify on this? I'll just... Mr. Chairman? On the other two pieces of legislation, what I would prefer to do, I think you have in your folder an analysis of Senate Bill number 198. I hope you do anyway, from Gary Jenkins, Director of Governmental Relations of NFIB, National Federation of Independent Businessmen, explaining what the bill does on dishonored checks, and also an analysis of the motor vehicle statute. Mr. Jenkins has been involved with these two pieces of legislation quite extensively. I'd prefer to turn the chair over to him if that's acceptable.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Jenkins. As Senator Duncan has stated, I represent the National Federation of Independent Business. And the sole purpose behind this, you have a basic explanation of this. The sole purpose behind this legislation is to basically clarify what was intended when the legislation was originally adopted in 1984. As some of you may recall, Senator Ray was the original sponsor of this, and when it was passed in 1984. And this laid out three levels of penalty that can occur when somebody writes a bad check. The first level was what had always been in common practice of allowing a business to charge up to... Initially, there had never had been a limit, so technically a business could have charged any amount. So any businesses set their own amount that they would charge for a return check. This set it in statute as a maximum of $25. The next level was if a person has contacted the person who writes a bad check and gets no response, they can proceed to file a claim in small claims court. And if the person then comes in and makes the check good, they're allowed to collect the amount of the check, that $25 returned check charge, plus any direct costs that they've incurred for filing with the court or legal fees or process service fees. And then the third level was if it goes to court and there's a judgment rendered, it set the damages that could be awarded by the court as a minimum of $100 or a maximum of $1,000, at three times the amount of the check. Again, the intent when the initial legislation was passed is that these three penalties would build upon one another, that the penalty would get increasingly severe. Unfortunately, the courts have been interpreting them kind of mutually exclusive from one another. And several judges, for example, if somebody goes all the way to court, has just awarded the triple damages but disallowed costs and the initial return check charge. But on a small check, that's less expensive than if, you know, if they had either gotten the return check charge or costs. And it's, so it's defeating the original concept. All this bill would do was just make it very clear that a person, if they have to go all the way through court, would be in fact able to collect the return check charge for their initial action to try to collect, their costs to go to court, plus the triple damages if that is awarded by the court, if it goes that far. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
If I understand what you're saying, then, on the current interpretation by the courts, if you took me to court for a $100 check,
right,
and it cost $60 to process it, the $60 comes out of the, in other words, the total amount that they still have to pay is $100, but the $60 court fee ends up coming out of the $100 instead of being added on top of?
Well, right now, the way the judges are interpreting it, we're working with a $100 check. Okay, if you went and you got through small claims court a judgment, the judge, the way they've been interpreting it, would award you the amount of the check plus the triple damages, which would be three times the amount of check or the additional $300, but disallow the cost to get to court or the return check charge, the initial charge of $20, $25. The intent was that they would build upon one another. And this is, the typical bad check is in the $25 to $45 range. And so, if a person goes to court and so forth, and the maximum damages that could be awarded would be, say if it's a $25 check, would be $75, three times the amount of the check. Correction, there's a limit of $100. Maximum damages would be $100 plus the amount of the check. But you could easily incur more cost than that, chasing the person down, you know, trying to get them there type of thing, trying to contact them and so forth, if you use, you know, a process server or if you obtain an attorney to collect the check. So, again, the intent was to allow the collection of costs. And again, the cost is limited up to a maximum $150 for the check. It wouldn't be unlimited cost, so somebody could hire the most expensive attorney they could ever find and so forth. So there is a practical limit there of $150.
Could you? I'm missing the $150 somehow. I have to read it. The $150 minimum is the minimum amount that the court would award in any check in?
No. The $150 is the maximum amount of costs that could be awarded.
Oh.
Okay. The triple damages is limited to a minimum of $100 or a maximum of $1,000. So if you're dealing with a $1,000 check, the damages would not be three times that amount, it would only be $1,000. Again, the intent of the legislation originally, and of course the intent now, is to have a significant deterrent in our statutes for people writing bad checks. And, you know, I am pleased to report that based on the feedback that we've gotten initially when this first passed in 1984, is it did have a significant positive impact. But what's happened is a couple of years have gone by some of these different interpretations have been coming out of the court, it is diffusing the impact of the statute.
Was there anybody else here that wanted to testify on 198?
Okay. I was curious about fiscal impact. Does anybody have any knowledge of fiscal impact to the court system, Honor?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dale Staley, staff of Senator Duncan. I talked with the agency this afternoon, and they implied that they were preparing a fiscal note, it would be zero, and they would get it to us as soon as possible.
Any other questions for Mr. Jenkins? Wes?
May I ask a question, Mr. Chairman? Sure. Wes Klein of the Alaska Bankers Association. And Gary, maybe you could respond. What happens if a check is returned to the merchant, mm-hmm, and he submits it again? Can that merchant then charge another $25 charge? I mean, they might resubmit the same check. and then, you know, design it again.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my experience with that, usually with when the check comes back to the merchant, the endorsement typically is canceled by the bank, and so you can't resubmit it. I'm involved in a couple of businesses where that routinely happens when we get an NSF back. And
Mr. Chairman, I think that's in the case of the second. You're usually allowed to go through a second time with the check.
Right.
And but then on the second time, and I think your question is, can you charge the $25 twice?
Can a merchant, for example, charge the $25 twice?
Good point, Wes.
Okay. My experience, the bank I happen to deal with doesn't bring it all the way back to me. They'll present it twice themselves, so I never see it in my personal experience. If that is a common practice.
Are you saying that you'd send the, in other words, when it comes back the first time?
It doesn't come back to me. I happen to be involved in the business. I know I've had some cases where I don't see it back.
He never gets it back and resubmits it.
My bank, in fact, holds it for a period of time and resubmits it. I've had some come back where they said it was presented twice and then the endorsement
then, of
was canceled.
It's obviously canceled.
Yeah. Right.
I'm told, Mr. Chairman, that it's not unusual for a check to be resubmitted two or three times. So it does happen, I guess, on occasion. I guess the various banks are different.
Chairman, so covered under for the purpose of this section, a return check charge may not be more than $25.
Right.
In other words, you return three times still would not exceed $25.
Right. And, Mr. Chairman, you know, the intent obviously is if the check is resubmitted or redeposited and it goes through, that there wouldn't be any charge at all. Generally, the intent of the $25 is to chase the person down and physically get them in to make the check good. So that normally occurs after the check has been, you know, refused for the second or third time by the maker's bank and has come back with the endorsement canceled.
Gary, is the $25 a new figure, or was that in the existing
law? No, that's in the existing law at this time. That is basically unchanged.
Well, what does the committee think? Credit
card. Mr. Chairman, I move the bill out.
Any objections?
Individual recommendations.
So good. $199. Not wrong, Jim.
Three for three, maybe, huh? Might be lucky.
The finance was this efficient, we wouldn't have any problems.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Jenkins. In this case, instead of representing the National Federation of Independent Business, I represent Outdoor Outfitters, a local business. I might explain for the committee the reason why. NFIB has a national policy that anybody who represents them cannot testify before a legislative committee unless the membership as a whole has voted on an issue. This is an issue that I did not have the opportunity to present to the membership, so they have not voted on it. If I could explain, I believe each of you have been given a copy of a memorandum that gives an overview of the reason for this legislation. Basically, years ago when the motor vehicle dealer definition was adopted in statute, it was adopted using very fairly broad language, referring to a person, so forth, who is engaged in buying, selling, dealing in new or used motor vehicles, trailers, or semi-trailers in the state. And apparently nobody gave much thought to the marine-type businesses who get involved in selling boat trailers only. As part of the motor vehicle dealer's statute, there is a requirement to obtain a $10,000 bond as a motor vehicle dealer. There is an exception to that in the statute for motorcycle dealers of a $3,000 bond. Again, in talking to the people in motor vehicle, their impression of the intent of the original statute was that it really wasn't intended to apply to boat trailers at all, but merely because of the broad wording of the language, that in a technical sense, boat dealers who sell trailers would be under the existing statute. The proposed bill before you would basically exempt out those people who are in the business of buying and selling new or used trailers only for boats.
Did anybody else here want to testify on Senate Bill 199? And why is everybody here?
Just to be busy, I guess.
Sure,
I don't
know.
It's an exciting committee here.
Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Now,
what is the bond situation for boat trailers right now? Is it
technically they're required because there's no exception in the statute to obtain a $10,000 bond?
Okay. And if there is an exception with this bill, it will be how much?
This would exempt them, right?
They wouldn't have any bonds.
Right.
And the reason to have the bonds is to protect the public somehow, the consumers, or so that if there's a, let's say they're a welding, if it's a boat trailer and someone's going to, you know, take their boat down here on a trailer, and the weld or something isn't going to hold or something. Is that one of the reasons why they originally had it in there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yielding, it's my understanding is, again, in talking to people in motor vehicles, trying to get a little background on the original statute, is aimed mainly at the used car syndrome type of thing and the problems that came out of that. Typically, for example, any new boat trailer that's sold carry a minimum warranty of 1 year, and some of them two. And as far as I know, there just hasn't been any problem with the dealer standing behind them. And I think the other thing is a practical matter. The Division of Motor Vehicles haven't not been really enforcing the statute anyhow, as far as it applied to boat dealers. But this is an attempt just to clarify the statute.
Senator Szymanski.
I had no questions until you made that last comment, and then you got me wondering a little bit. The original intent then was to protect those people who came across a used car lot or that was also dealing with boats and trailers, and trailers have a licensing and a registration that goes with them. And if some guy was peddling fraudulent trailers or stolen trailers or something like that, and he had no risk associated with it, he could sell it any day of the week to anybody that wanted it, and there's no recourse back to the salesman if we eliminate it now. If under the current scenario, you can go back and attach a guy's bond for peddling you a bum trailer. Is that right?
I would assume you could if they were in fact bonded. I guess I would question if they're actually selling fraudulent trailers that they've acquired fraudulently or stolen trailers. I would suspicion they're probably not bonded in the first place anyway, because they would lose it very quickly. But if somebody actually did, that would technically, I would assume, be something permitted under the statute. It would be able to go back against the bond if in fact they were a bonded dealer.
Are automobile dealers bonded?
Right. Car dealers are bonded.
So that bond would probably cover anything that they sell anyway.
That is correct.
So in effect, we're exempting boat trailer people from being automotive dealers.
That is correct. If they were an automotive dealer, they would have to meet the requirements of the statute and obtain the bond. So because this specifically limits it to businesses that are engaged only in the sale of boat trailers, and it's designed for single boat trailers. So in some cases, you could get in a situation where there's a semi-trailer type of thing that could carry multiple boats. In that case, it would not be exempt from the statute. They would still have to meet the bonding requirement.
Mr. Chairman, like for a marine dealer that would happen to sell boats but sells the trailers with them?
That's correct.
What's the will of the committee?
Move it out.
Individual recs? Any objections? So done. Anything else come before the committee? Meeting adjourned.
Come on.